I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I'm Dr. Liz Murray, founder of this project, where each episode we will be sharing one interview from one of the voices from our project. Presented by myself and Laura Middleton Hughes, each episode will feature one voice, someone sharing their story of overcoming major medical problems early on in life, to share a message of strength, hope, and resilience to others. To learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for the latest episode.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Mortal and Strong. I'm Laura.
And I'm Liz.
And today we're joined on the sofa by the lovely Lisa, who is talking to us all about her journey with a diagnosis of lupus. We do also cover suicide in this episode, just to let you know. Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for coming.
Hi.
So we're going to start today, as we do with every episode, and ask you a few quick fire rounds to get to know you a little bit better before we go into the main interview. So, a sea swim or at the pool?
Oh, a warm pool, definitely.
A sofa or an armchair? I mean, you're sitting in an armchair now, but...
Sofa.
We should have swapped.
We should have. Bikini or swimsuit?
Swimsuit.
Earrings or bracelet?
Bracelet.
Abroad or at home?
Depends on the time of year. If it's winter, definitely abroad.
Hotel or camping?
Hotel.
Writing or typing?
It depends. I think if it is meant to be sentimental, writing. If it is for another purpose, typing.
Typing's easier, but yeah, I agree. Pizza or pasta?
50-50 on that one.
And fluffy or silky dressing gown?
Fluffy.
Oh, there we go. Nice cozy one. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and really appreciate it. What we're going to do is we're going to take you right back to prior to any form of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about who you were and
what you're doing in life.
So I was a charcutier. I made
amazing meat. That's how we met.
We did.
Yeah.
You eating all her food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made salami predominantly from venison from Sandringham and Holcombe because it's quite local to me. And I had a cabin at the top of my garden, which was fondly known as the meat shed, which my parents refused to call it because it sounded so sinister. And so I was growing my business. I'd won quite a few awards.
Well known in Norfolk.
Yeah, yeah. I did all the markets and things.
What took you into that business? Is it like something you grew up around? Or?
No. So I went to kind of on a day course to the School of Arts and Food, which is in Nottinghamshire, where I'm from, to do bakery, and they were running a year-long degree course. So I didn't really do any further education when I left school, so I thought, actually, I'd quite like to do that. So I signed up to do the baking, didn't feel a connection with the bakery tutor initially, to the point where I knew it'd be a bit of a barrier for me, but the guy who was running the butchery course was the River Cottage butcher, the guy with the beard, Ray Smith, and I completely fell in love with him and his wife, Mary. So I switched and I loved it. My dad's a cabinet maker, so a saw was kind of really easy, and I really enjoyed it. And I did baking as my minor. So
so you can make good cakes as well?
Well, the kid, yeah. I like baking.
Oh, next time I see you, bring us some tasty treats.
I will. So yeah, so I worked initially as head of butchery locally, and then when I became pregnant, I decided I would go self-employed because it fit.
Okay, and so from that point, what happened? Like, what led you to having a diagnosis?
So when I had my third child, it was quite a tricky pregnancy. She was massive. She was 10-40 when she was born.
Wow. Natural birth?
It was a natural birth. I was like a celebrity. All the midwives came, are you the lady that had a 10-14 baby and you don't have any stitches?
Or kind were you overdue? Was she?
No. So my husband's 6'8".
Oh, okay.
And it was incredible. I saw a cranial osteopath locally throughout my whole pregnancy, and the labour was 4 hours, no pain relief. It just, my other two were nightmare labours over 25 hours, and it was just, it was amazing. But within a couple of weeks, I couldn't walk down the stairs. I had just crippling pain in my ankles and the tops of my feet. So I went to see my GP, and she was very good, said, oh, I'll send you for an MRI. Nothing really showed on the MRI, a bit of old injury, which I think came from falling over a chain link fence when I was 18 and probably drunk.
Always drink related.
So I just kind of thought, well, it will go. And then it didn't really go. I kind of just got used to it. And then I started having kind of other symptoms. So my periods became really heavy. So then I thought, oh, maybe it's like perimenopause. I just kind of fought with it for a while, I suppose. And then 5 years ago, I lost my brother to suicide, and my body just went haywire. I had really awful IBS. I kept getting this rash kind of all over my top of my body. The pain kind of increased that I had, and then I kept getting bouts probably every 6 to 8 weeks of just fatigue where I can get out of bed. Like, it hurts to like hold my hand up to my face.
Wow.
And so then I thought that I might have MS because the symptoms fit. Like, my legs just stopped working. And psychologically, it was really hard because I think losing someone to suicide kind of opens this box of making the impossible possible.
Mm-hmm.
So the fear of psychologically kind of ending up so ill that there's no return was massive.
Can you just, if you don't mind, go into that period of time when you did lose your brother? Like, how did you feel, like, in yourself?
I have three brothers. I'm the youngest by 8 years. So, and he was 13 years older than me. They all still lived in Nottinghamshire, so there was, you know, geography in the way. But he was, my parents said, when I was born, he just looked after me. Like, he loved having a little sister. My other two brothers, not so much. I think I knocked them off their perches a bit. But he was just, I remember him taking me out for, you know, Happy Meal and then buying me these Wuzzles at the time. In the 80s, they were a thing. And we had a really great relationship. And when Dot was born, my youngest, he rode over on his bike with loads of dresses and stuff. He was amazing. So he became unwell a year before he died, and the geography was really difficult because I was kind of limited onto what I could do. So when he came out of hospital, he would come and stay with us for like 2 weeks at a time, which was hard because we live in a really small house. We didn't have a spare room. At the time, my son was doing his GCSEs, we had a baby and to run a business.
Life.
Yeah, life, it was just really shit. And then it always felt like a bit of a reality because he was so strong, like he was totally fearless. He, in his younger years, would, you know, get into the odd fight, I think, but he never had any fear, and he was just like that. If someone was harming someone he loved, or if he saw something going on, he just wouldn't think, he'd just, you know, get involved. And I remember getting the call. I had a nightmare day with Dot. She was probably two at the time, and my husband came home, and he was out on the drive for ages. And I remember being inside just feeling really pissed off because I'd had like a really hard day with her. The house looked like it had been burgled. She'd tipped flour all over the floor.
As kids do.
And I was just like, oh my God, why are you staying outside? Like, fucking come in. Like, I'm just going to. And he came in and just said, I'm really sorry, Lise. Yeah, Clyde's died. And
so he got the phone call.
Yeah, my youngest brother rang Tom because he felt that he couldn't do it over the phone. Tom was out. I think my big kids were with their dad in Nottinghamshire anyway, so we just bundled into the car. I drove, and we just drove to my parents' house. And it was just a blur, really. I think my dad wanted to go and see him because he needed that closure. My mum couldn't, so I went with my dad, and it was just, I've been claustrophobic since then, because the morgue was under the hospital, and all that, it was just really horrid.
It's all the after effects, isn't it, that actually people don't, and I'm not saying you even think about that, but it is the case of, like, you have so much to pick up after things happen, and it's, you know, it can be really challenging just getting through that, and you're trying to grieve, but... Yeah. There's such mess to sort out.
There was
and
so
the
much
irony
mess.
That people often go into that suicidal mindset because they feel like they're a burden.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't see what happens afterwards and how much their loss has such an impact.
No, and that he left a note, you know, which was to my beloved family, and it was of that ilk, you know, I feel like a burden, I'm really sorry. Mm-hmm. He was a really strong guy, successful business, you know, you wouldn't look at someone like that and think it was possible.
And you're going through heightened stress levels at this point, so therefore I guess other symptoms are coming out that you probably just related to the stress.
Yeah. But
was that then something that you then went to see the doctor about? Were you, like, how did you go on to get your...
So having had three babies, I'd never had piles in my life. Clyde suffered with piles because he had a very stressful job, and that we were always kind of taking the piss out of him because he was, you know, piles was his thing. And literally a week after he died, I had piles, which was just so weird. And then I had all these IBS symptoms. So I went to the doctor and I was diagnosed with IBS after quite a long journey. I ended up having to go privately for a consultation, and then went onto an NHS pathway with the same consultant, who was amazing. And he listens to me for an hour, and it was so amazing because he really believed in the mind-gut axis and the fact that, you know, emotional trauma has such an effect on your body. And he was, you know, very apologetic about my loss. He was amazing. And then from there, I think my symptoms just carried on. So it's been from there, Dot being born, to now is 7 years. And I only got my diagnosis at the beginning of February this year.
Wow. Okay. So when finally find the diagnosis, and how did they relayed it that to you?
So I kept going back to my GP, who was amazing. She would literally run every test under the sun if she can, and she was also feeling frustrated because she didn't feel like my symptoms were being listened to. It was very on the medical model of, it has to fit all these criteria, otherwise we can't possibly do any more tests. So it got to the point when I was really worried that I had MS.
What symptoms were making you worried? What was the driving symptoms at this point?
So when I had a flare, it's just the fact that my legs just wouldn't work. Like, I have to use every single scrap of mental energy to make my legs move one in front of the other. And they felt tingly, and just like they weren't connected to my body, and the fatigue, I can't do anything. And then the psychological effects of that. So one of my other brother's best friend is a brain surgeon in London, and he said, I will see you, Lise, but you've got to have a private scan. I'm really sorry, can you afford that? It was kind of, well, not really, but that's why credit cards were invented. So we'll go there. Because looking at it here, I just wasn't being listened to, and I kind of needed to know, because that kind of condition needs early treatment. So I went and had a brain MRI, which is horrendous for someone who's claustrophobic, but because it was private, my husband could stay and keep his hand on my leg. He said he had cramp, but he didn't take his hand off me because he knew I'd freak out and probably not complete. So he's been a diamond, and that came back as clear, which was a massive relief. But then it's kind of, well, if it's not that,
what is it?
What is it?
And you start to question whether you are fabricating it, whether it is psychological.
Like, yeah. I'm going constantly going, I've got this and I've got this and I've got this. And then it was mooted that I had fibromyalgia, and I'd done a lot of research into that. I know a lot of people. I work with a lot of clients who have fibromyalgia, and it feels like, you know, the odds and sods bin for all the tins that have got no labels on. We'll just throw it in the fibromyalgia bin.
So you didn't think it was, but no. They were saying, what is, I don't actually know what fibromyalgia is. What is it?
Fibromyalgia is a term where some people get pain and inflammation in their muscles and aches and pains. There's a lot of stigma with fibromyalgia because, like you say, some people who've got varied symptoms kind of get pushed in that direction. There's no obvious test, there's no obvious way of identifying if someone's got it, and it sometimes it can feel like it's a fob off diagnosis. Mm-hmm. There are people who genuinely have muscle flares and severe disabling pain, but there is a minority of people who are labeled with that, given some pain relief, and then left.
And it's just like the easy way out.
And the guy in my brother's friend who I saw, he said, look, he said, doctors don't like people like you because you don't have anything. Like, you've got all these symptoms, but we can't run a test to diet. So he said, actually, we're probably not that interested. Like, if you want to go do your own research, he said, and he's a family friend, so I don't feel like he would treat, you know, a patient that way. But he was very frank and honest with me, and I appreciated that. But I also knew that I didn't have fibromyalgia. So
did you go to Google?
No.
We spoke at one point, didn't we?
Yeah. So they gave me physio, go away and just read this leaflet on fibromyalgia and we'll kind of get you an appointment with a physio. And it was really serendipitous because the day I had my appointment with the physio at my GP surgery, I walked in and she said, I'm not going to do any physio on you. Like, she could tell I was in a flare. Like, I had to be driven there. Like, my legs just were like lead. She said, I'm going to push this back to them. And I was just getting to the end of my tether. So I messaged Liz and just said, I know you've got lupus. How did you get diagnosed? Because it feels really difficult.
And is that right? Is lupus something that doesn't get diagnosed because of lots of symptoms that are related to other things?
For the sake of people listening, lupus is an autoimmune condition, which means your body produces antibodies. Normally we do it to fight infection, to fight viruses, but in lupus, the body gets it wrong and it fights its own tissues. Now, for some people, it can attack the kidneys, the lungs, it can attack the joints, and it manifests very differently for every person. Mm. And because it's so varied in symptomatology, it's very hard to diagnose. It does take years, annoyingly. And what a flare can be anything from having just a rash or a period of fatigue or joint pain. So when you go to visit the GP, when you're having a flare, one time you might go because you've got a rash. GP will treat the rash, you'll go away.
So because it's autoimmune, it literally affects any part of your body.
Any part of your body.
Which then is why you go with something, oh, I've got a sore this. Yeah. But actually it's not related necessarily to your foot, but it is. But it's
people, and when you're seeing these different doctors over time, they treat things individually in isolation. It's very hard for sometimes to get a good doctor to take a step back, look at the last few years of your life and go, hang on a minute.
It's like a dot-to-dot.
Yeah, it is a dot to dot. Well, hang on.
This is in the right place,
at this age, you had this. At this age, you had that. And then they begin to put the pieces together. And it's like a light bulb moment when someone finally does put all those pieces together. And the other thing is the tests needed for lupus are not your bog standard tests.
Okay.
So the blood tests needed are very complicated. You need about 20 vials of blood to get diagnosed. And it it is really hard to people. It's not in the forefront of a lot of doctors' minds.
No. Is it something that you can have from a very young age, but it not be kind of caught till you're older? Or is it something that you generally get as you get older?
For me, my first, what I am convinced was my first lupus thing was when I was 18. I ended up in a wheelchair. Like I say, I couldn't walk. Wow. My legs would not work. Mm. And they did x-rays, they did scans. I just started medical school and they kept saying, well, your blood tests are fine, your x-ray's fine, there's no reason why you can't walk. And
but
I was like, but I can't walk, so what am I meant to do? And then they did surgery and they realized there was inflammation going on in my muscles, and my muscles, looking back, the lupus had obviously attacked it, so my muscles became fibrosed, weren't staying in position, so they physically couldn't hold my pelvis together, so I had to have reconstruction. And so for me, I was obviously 18, but when you're describing that fatigue and that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There are days when you cannot get up the stairs and that you physically... It's hard to explain. Even washing your hair is exhausting.
Yeah. Does stress as well alleviate, like, not alleviate, does it encourage the pain more? What's the word? I can't, my brain's
so like it. Is it like 80% of lupus sufferers are female, so they think there's a hormone link?
And I'm just thinking, obviously, with what happened with your brother, and like, can it I can't tell you. Exacerbate, that's it. Can it exacerbate the symptoms and make them...
And this is the other really frustrating thing, is there are different triggers for lupus. You can have a virus or a cold, and your immune system goes into overdrive and starts attacking itself instead of attacking the cold or the virus. You can have something else cause it. Stress causes it. Extreme heats. So you can go on holiday to a really hot place, that can cause a flare. But stress is a major trigger. And there is a stigma that because you're stressed, that people then think your symptoms are manifested because you're stressed.
Okay.
So you're almost psychological. You're almost fabricating it, and you just can't cope with stress, and therefore that's why you're in bed.
But actually the stress is bringing up the symptoms of an actual issue.
The cortisol rise that you get with stress triggers your body to go into this flare of a start attacking itself. So you could get kidney failure because of a major death in the family. Yeah. And when I got married a few weeks before my wedding, that was an excited stress. I came out in a rash all over and needed to go on steroids. So with your brother passing, that was a big stress.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that you weren't necessarily coping. That's why you were lying and couldn't walk.
Yeah.
You said you had
a flare.
You said you got a diagnosis only recently.
Yeah.
How? Well, you're literally talking weeks ago.
February,
So, wow. Now you have that diagnosis. How do you feel? Do you feel like you have kind of put the last puzzle of the piece together, or do you feel...
I kind of weirdly felt elated because I wasn't a hypochondriac. Like, there was a reason, which also means there is a treatment pathway.
Okay.
But I also was diagnosed with, and I think it's pronounced Sjögren's syndrome.
Sjögren's. I've got that too, yeah.
So all the mucous membrane can dry out, and that's affected, and it seems to be a bedfellow of lupus.
Right.
So,
Raynaud's, Sjögren's,
all those other symptoms.
All those other weird ones all come together.
But the biggest kind of thing that caused me elation was actually sitting with a doctor who listened and wasn't overly hung up on blood tests.
She's wonderful,
yeah.
We can't mention her name, but I was so glad you got to see her.
Yes, and she just said, well, it it's very obvious. And she spent an hour and she went through kind of chronologically when I had all the symptoms. Yeah, it was just, it was amazing. And I left there. I had to go to a different hospital out of the county where I live to see this woman who was recommended by Liz. She was amazing, rheumatologist. And I left with not only a diagnosis, I was given a treatment plan there and then, which started that day.
Wow.
I was given access to this amazing kind of online system. I can view all my blood tests and I can see the parameters which it should be, and I can message a lupus nurse. And it just felt amazing. Like, there was, it kind of gave me power over it, I suppose.
You messaged me and it was like, yeah, oh my god, someone has finally listened. Like, it really was, wasn't it?
And how long was it since you thought that lupus could be a potential?
I think probably 3 years I've been thinking, and I've mentioned it when I've been and I've said, look, I feel like I might have lupus, and it's always been like, it's not.
And this is quite powerful because it shows that, again, the self-advocating and actually, like, hence I'm asking quite a few questions because I don't know a huge amount about lupus. I know Liz has it, but because of my condition, I don't really know a lot about other illnesses. And this is why I'm finding this incredibly interesting to find out more. But it does make you aware that, like, if you don't know what these diseases are, how can you ever advocate for yourself?
Yeah.
So these conversations hopefully will get listened to so many people that might go, do you know what? I've been having that. I've been having these weird flare-ups. Maybe I could have lupus. Could I go down that route of being checked? But if you don't know what it is, you're never gonna you're never gonna mention it to your GP, are you?
No.
So I think that's really, it's a really strong sort of, hopefully this is gonna be incredible for awareness. Over the past few years, how have you found you've coped? Do you have like any support? Have you managed to find people that you can talk to?
So I have married literally the most amazing man on the planet. He is
big up to the husband.
Oh yeah, he is. Well, he is incredible, and I think if I hadn't got him at home, I would really struggle. So on Friday, I had a really rough day with struggling against the system, and I came home, and he was just so incredible. And I think that comes from having two social worker parents. He is just empowering and empathetic. He sees how hard it is, and he picks up so much. He just honestly he picks up so much. That, and so after my brother died, I retrained as a psychotherapist.
Wow, okay.
So I think sitting and listening to other people's stories, just, it is a real privilege, and it just kind of makes you feel that actually you're really lucky.
I guess it takes that, you know, you're hearing other people's stories, so it makes you feel less alone.
Yeah.
More part of, you know, everyone has an issue, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think until people start talking, and I guess in your line of work now, people talk.
Yeah.
And you hear the stories, and it makes you go, oh, I'm not the only one that feels like that, or only one that has had those thoughts.
Yeah.
Life can be shit, life can be hard, and you're also getting to see that those people make improvements and recovery.
The kind of downside of it is, I suppose, you also get to hear other people's horror stories, and it can be hard because you feel a bit like you just want to disengage. It's a defense mechanism. So when I was training, I had to have 40 hours of personal therapy, which I needed following the death of my brother, but also I was quite stubborn. And my go-to defense mechanism would be just like, I'm just disengaging this, I'm putting up the wall, and you know, you can just wait until I'm ready to lower it. And I have to be really mindful of that with the healthcare system, because I hear so much and I just think, oh, I'm not doing that because it's going to hurt. What if they get it wrong? I'm going to feel powerless and cross, scared shitless. So if I just don't do it, I'm not going to put myself in that position. So I have to be really mindful of that. And that is a battle that I do have.
Are you quite good at separating your work from your personal life? Because it's quite hard to, you don't take the stories home with you.
And initially it was really difficult, but I have an amazing supervisor. So I have, as a member of BACP, I have to have clinical supervision, but I have him. And then my peers that I trained with, we're kind of in a supervision group. So we do that once a week.
But it's good to have that purpose, I think.
Yeah.
And again, we've felt that a lot in, when you have an illness or a diagnosis, or even with the loss of your brother, I'm sure you went into kind of, oh, where do I fit into life? Like, because it's such a change in how life has been.
Yeah.
That finding something that firstly brings you purpose, yeah, but focus. Also,
it's kind of a manifestation of grief. Some people fall away from society because that feels safe for them. For me, definitely it has been to use my pain and try and turn it into something positive, because I think I would have just gone insane if I hadn't. The gravity of the pain that I felt would have stopped me being a good mum and a good wife and all those things. So I had to use it. So doing what I do for a job and fundraising, you know, I did every year, either on the anniversary of his death or his birthday, I do a charity thing, and I did a coastal walk, and then the last 5 miles was shingle, which just, I couldn't walk for 2 weeks. It was horrendous. So I thought I'd do a skydive, which was also horrendous. But actually, I understood the term adrenaline junkie, because for 2 days after my skydive, I felt no pain.
Wow.
And I'd forgotten adrenaline. What that was like. I didn't realise how much pain I was in.
So basically, she used to jump out of pain every few days.
Yeah. Do you know what? If we lived, Tom said to me, if we lived near an airfield, you would do it. And I said, yeah, I would now. I'd be like, I don't think I'd do it again.
Just
but for those few days, I'd be like, oh my God, I'd fully do that. Like pain free. Wow. I had picked up a spider. I'm terrified of spiders the next day. I saw it's a spider.
What has changed from it?
I suppose.
It's like, and how, like, obviously with your children, how are they coping with everything from that, but also your diagnosis? Because I'm assuming, do you talk to them?
Yeah, I do. It's hard. I feel guilty quite a lot, because
it's like mummy's always ill.
Yeah,
it can feel like that at times.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
It can feel like that, and or crying, because the, you know, psychological side of it, that kind of helplessness, it's the not being listened to and not being validated makes me angry, and then that manifests as tears. I think, and I could probably spend a day crying. And I have to stress that it's not, I'm not sad because of them. It's just, you know.
You've been through a lot over the last few years.
Yeah. And so Friday is a really great, so my middle child is 16 and she sent me a text saying, I hope you've had a good day. And I said, I've had a really, really shit day today. I can't wait to be at home.
I'm glad you said
and
that.
And she came home. She goes to school in Norwich. She came home and she bought me a plant on her way home and left me a note on the table. And I was just... That kind of, she'd said something along the lines of, you're so strong, I love you so much.
Oh.
You know, and I was just talking about it to them feels really important, because being a human is pretty shit a lot of the time. And if we shield our children from that, which was kind of the old style of parenting, when they grow up and realise that life can be a bit shit, they feel like it's a personal failure, because everyone else makes it look really easy.
And mummy's had a great time and she's never cried.
So
I had a therapist say just that to me, that don't hide away, because we were worried, because for so long I was in and out of hospital and I was trying to hide it from her.
Yeah.
But she was picking up on the fact that I was hiding something.
Yeah.
And the therapist said... Yeah, and the therapist said, no, you need to be honest if you're having a shit day, so that she can learn how you get over that shit day, and that she's got a realistic expectation of what life is going to be like. Because like you say, life is going to be hard as an adult.
Yeah.
Generational thing is like, you just crack on with it, and you don't show your feelings.
You don't talk about it.
It's the same with men, isn't it? And this is why mental health in men is so big, is because they're told to be strong and man up. And actually, as I say, having a cry with them, but also it allows them to go, well, I can say I'm having a bad day, you know, get home from school. Our school's been really crap today. Like, they might not be able to do that if you were not saying something. So I think it's a really inspiring way of parenting, actually.
Yeah, and they do, like the question you asked me about pool or sea, I'd love to swim in the sea, but here it's cold. So cold.
Oh,
a part
hurts
of my lupus, if I get cold, I feel ill, like my body starts to shut down and I can't get warm, and I'm really grumpy because I feel ill. So I can't, unless it's a scorcher of a day.
You know, when I'm cooking, I have to leave chicken out to room temperature because I can't physically handle the meat if it's cold from the fridge, because it triggers the Raynaud's and it hurts so much. And like washing your hands with a cold tap, stuff like that. It's every single day reminder of chronic pain. And I was going to ask, how are you coping with mentally the realization that this is incurable? You are going to have pain and flares for the rest of your life. There is that risk that the medication that we take, you know, is, some of them are forms of chemotherapy. So they are immunosuppressants. Steroids affect your weight. how are you coping knowing that that lies ahead? Or is it that you think, well, at least I know what I'm dealing with, there are ways?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I kind of anxious because I tend to be allergic to flipping everything.
Usually the way.
So the first medication I've been put on, I had quite a bad reaction to, so I've had to stop. So there'll be a next one. But actually, before my diagnosis, I had really good results from seeing a medical herbalist. And it was actually her that was constantly pushing and saying, this feels like lupus. Yes, you are going through perimenopause and I am managing these things for you, but also it feels like lupus. So she put me on, like, it tasted disgusting. It literally turns your mouth inside out twice a day. And all the symptoms I had from perimenopause pretty much stopped. And the pain management was kind of better. But I had to stop that before I saw the new rheumatologist because it would affect my blood work. So I'm thinking I'm going to go with traditional medical model so far. And then if I feel like I'm losing my resilience with it, I will go back to the more kind of alternative therapy, I think, because it feels like a good fit for me. Probably because I feel more in control.
I was just thinking, and when you're well, you feel good and you kind of embrace it and think, okay, I'm in a good spell.
Yeah.
And you forget quickly. What lifestyle adjustments did you make?
Well, I had to stop saying yes to everything.
I need to learn that one.
Yeah. Give some tips.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I was on the playing field committee, active in fundraising. I would, you know, we'd have people over to stay quite a lot. We moved away from family. And that's had to stop just because it's too much. Like, it's not worth the cost. I really want to see people and I want to be sociable, but not at the cost of being in bed for a week to 10 days.
Yeah.
And I've stopped drinking alcohol about 2 years ago because that was triggering. It just gave me ridiculous hot flushes and dietary change. And I know I could go more hardcore on that. I love sugar. And I know that sugar likes inflammation. So I definitely could do more, but
you've also got to enjoy life.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is very much the way I see life, is that yes, there are things, you know, we could say, oh, we won't have chocolate again, but actually are you just gonna be miserable eating your salad leaves and
watching,
you know,
everyone else eat them?
It's balance. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is about balance.
And if you could go back and tell your younger self or give a message to someone starting their journey who having a lot of weird symptoms, and what advice would you give?
I think that you know your own body better than anybody else does. No matter how many tests you have, I think you just know. You have this, we all have a gut instinct and it has become lazy because we don't need it anymore, but it's there for a reason. And I would say, like, listen to that. And it's really hard when you're constantly being fobbed off to not give up and rest in those times, you know, don't beat yourself up. But because after that, you kind of come back a bit stronger and become more resilient and go, actually, this is not okay. Mm. And hearing other people's stories, the amount of women who I see with prolapsed everything and they'll just go home and there's nothing we can do. That's not okay. Wow. Just find other people. The charities are really good. Lupus charity is amazing.
Is there like a support?
Yeah.
Sort of network that we can recommend.
Yeah. Lupus UK have been really helpful.
They're brilliant. And there are some good Facebook support groups for people to say, I'm having this flare, or I've got this symptom. Is this a typical, is this flare or is this something else? And it is a really good supportive community of kind of advising people. And with, because there's so many medications, and with lupus, it's very rare that you stick with one medication and that's it, and that will see you through the next 20 years, because I mean, one of them causes problems with your eyesight and
medication causes problems with, you have to have more medication for those problems then
and people change medications quite frequently with lupus, and that support group that you can get access to, and Lupus UK is really good for knowing what it is and what it isn't. And
well, we'll add those addresses to our show notes and on the information that we share about this episode, because I think it's really, as you say, important that we can guide people in the right place, and if people need that support, that they can find it.
Yeah, and also kind of just don't be shy about asking your GP to refer you somewhere else.
Yep.
Yeah.
We feel like we have to stay to the county we're in and those hospitals, and they like us to because it's easier, and you know, it is easier because you can access the services quicker. But actually, I think you can just, you know, do research.
Yeah,
definitely.
Exactly.
And we end every podcast with asking, what brings you joy and makes you smile when you get out of bed in the morning?
Living where I live, I think, and being with the people that I am. I think not quite getting it right first time round made me choose my life partner very carefully, and I feel incredibly lucky for that. And my kids are amazing, so I just, yeah, it feels like the small things become the big things.
It's very poignant.
Yeah. I like that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the couch today. It's been amazing, and yes, we'll definitely put all those details on, but thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.